dodges. I ride in this wind on my good horse. I call you my shiny black bears to the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else. And this week,
you tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, W201CD Ithaca Community Radio at 88.1 FM, or Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. The politics and economics of the healthcare industry have resulted in a variety of drugs and procedures that actually do more harm than good. This is especially true in the area of healthcare for women. As it's Mother's Day, we're going to focus the show on women's health, both treatment and mistreatment. In the first 90 minutes of the program, we're going to hear a talk by John Lee, MD, a physician who pioneered the use of natural hormones for the treatment of osteoporosis and other conditions that affect women from midlife onward. Then we'll conclude the program with a talk by Canadian feminist psychotherapist Dr. Bonnie Burstow on the rising use of electroshock, especially on women, and its roots in fascism.
No fat rich man's pony can overtake you. There's not a rider from the east to the west to hold you alive in this dark.
John Lee, MD, is the author of several best-selling books on women's health, including What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Menopause and What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Breast Cancer. The talk we're about to hear, Graveyards Are Full of Women That Shouldn't Be There, was given in 1999.
I want to tell you a little bit about myself. I was in family practice for many years. I graduated from medical school in 1955. And so we're talking, 44 years ago. Halfway through my practice, an event happened that seemed trivial at the time, but has literally transformed what I do in life. So I divide my practice up into two time periods, one from 1955 to 1978, we'll say, and then from 1978 to now. When I started out, as I say, I was a very traditional, mainline, a family practitioner in a little town in California called Mill Valley, across the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco. I was on the board of directors, I was the editor of the Bulletin, I was chairman of the Environmental Health Committee, I was chairman of the delegation to the California Medical Association, I thought everybody just had to do all these things, and I was trying to be the best doctor I could. But I gradually became aware that doctors are not being used very efficiently in this country, in that it's become a tradition in practice nowadays, conventional practice, that you wait until someone has his heart attack, and then you tell him what he should have been eating for 20 years. Or you wait until the diabetes shows up before you tell him about sugar. Or you wait until the stroke occurs or the heart attack, or on and on. And we're not supposed to teach preventive medicine, which is very strange. Granted, we didn't learn very much in medical school about that. But most of us have gone out of our way to try to find what causes these illnesses. Because if you can find the cause and prevent it, that's much better than waiting for the stroke and then trying to undo it. In fact, some people say, I'm the kind of a doctor that if he hears that two doctors out of three recommend treatment product A and the other guy treatment product B, I always wonder what the third guy knows that the other two didn't know. Because I was always discovering there's all kinds of things that I didn't know. But in the mid-70s, what happened was it became a realization to everybody that giving estrogen to women was the one and only cause of the rise of endometrial cancer, cancer of the uterus. The number of cases rose by a factor of 6 to 8 times, and it was due exclusively to the estrogen that doctors were giving to women. And I remember the year when the CMA, the California Medical Association, sponsored a weekend seminar. I think it cost $180 to go to this, because there was a real question The question was, if you tell the woman she needs the estrogen for her bones, for instance, and then she later develops cancer of the uterus, she might sue you. On the other hand, if you don't give her the estrogen and later she develops a hip fracture, she might sue you. So it was a real problem, as you might imagine. And so I signed up for this, and I went to it. I wondered, how are they going to resolve this? Because this didn't seem right to me, that we're using something that causes cancer to try to prevent a hip fracture. So I went to that, and the answer that they gave was, you let the woman decide. That way she can't sue you. $180 for that. They could have sent that out on a postcard. You know? They said, yes, this is a real possibility. But if you let her decide, then you can always say, well, she chose it. I gave her the two options, and she chose it. Well, that didn't seem right. And by coincidence, by serendipity, by karma, fate, whatever, I was invited to give a talk at a health meeting held in San Francisco. And also giving a talk was a young biochemist named Dr. Pete. And he challenged the 400 doctors that were there. He challenged them, saying, look, when you do a hysterectomy, or you take out the ovaries, or the ovaries quit working on women, and you know that the ovaries make two hormones, estrogen and progesterone, why is it you only give one back? And I thought, he's got a point. And then he went on to show all the things that have been known about progesterone. Progesterone was discovered in the early part of this century, and it was known that it's absolutely necessary for the survival of the fertilized egg and the development of the baby and the IQ of the baby and all the whole time during gestation. And in fact, that's why it's called the progestation hormone, progesterone, and that it's also beneficial to the immune system and to brain cells and muscle cells and the thyroid hormone. Helps the wounds heal. It's a good mild diuretic. It's a good antidepressant. It works. There are receptor sites for, you know, hormones work by binding with receptor sites. Your individual cells that are going to respond to progesterone, they make receptors in anticipation of the hormone arriving, because it's the combination of the receptor and the hormone that then activate the cell to perform the function. So there are receptor sites in your mucous membranes, your respiratory tree, your bronchial tubes, and the intestinal lining. There's receptor sites in white blood cells and brain cells. It's a hormone for the whole body. And it's called a sex hormone, but yet it doesn't have any sexual characteristics. You can give all the progesterone in the world to anybody, and they will not develop breasts from it. That's what estrogen does. Estrogen causes breasts to grow and fat to accumulate on your hips and get big thighs and make an outstanding figure skater, ballroom dancer. So at any rate, here was Dr. Pete saying, progesterone's a marvelous hormone. Why aren't you using it? And he said, and by the way, he said, since 1930s, it's been synthesized from fats and oils and plants, so we have access to actual progesterone, just as humans make, and it's the best absorbed steroid through the skin. It's far better absorbed through the skin than taking it by the stomach. In fact, the ovary never put either of its hormones in anybody's stomach, and it just doesn't work that way. They get destroyed, and they go to the liver, and they get metabolized, and they're gone, and then all the metabolites are bad for you, and you absorb it through the skin. So I go back to my office, and here I am confronted every day by women developing osteoporosis, and they can't use estrogen because they already have had their breast cancer, or they're obese, or they're diabetic, or they've had vascular disorders, and these are all contraindications for estrogen. So I thought, these women can go buy the cream. All I need to do is monitor and see what happens to the bones. And why shouldn't it work? Because osteoporosis accelerates at menopause. At menopause is when you lose the progesterone, I thought in those days, and therefore it might be progesterone that the bones need. I looked up all the references that Dr. Pete had given me, and each paper that I found of his that he used as a reference, I found 60 or 70 other references. Pretty soon I had a garage full of references. I had thousands. And it was embarrassing to talk to my colleagues because they were just as ignorant as I had been. They didn't understand anything about what I was going to be doing here. And then when the people's bones began to get better, they had a hard time believing that too. But an interesting thing happened when I gave talks at our local hospital staff and showed the rising bone mineral density in the women on progesterone. They would all sit there mystified and say, wow, that's amazing, John. And then they would wonder when some big drug company is going to come and explain it all to them and give them free samples and things. And never happened, and it probably won't. But one by one, they would come to me and say, John, my mother-in-law is coming to town, and she has terrible osteoporosis. How do you use this stuff? Or my wife's sister has a PMS. How do you use this stuff? and so on. So one by one, they would use it on their own families, but they didn't want their colleagues to know they were using something as strange as real progesterone. Yet they knew that real thyroid is better than the fake. They knew that the real insulin is better than the pork insulin or the pig insulin. They know that if you're going to substitute something, the real thing is what you need. And so it all made sense. And so, as I say, I became more and more outspoken on the fact that conventional medicine has neglected a real progesterone. And instead they give synthetics that are foreign to the body, made from pharmaceutical coal tar and water, and they don't work as well, and they're all loaded with side effects. And I felt people ought to know. So 5 years ago, November, I also got so interested in preventive medicine that I began teaching a class at our local college. It's called Optimal Health, How to Be as Healthy as You Can Be. And the students supply a slightly different description, how to be as healthy as you can be in spite of the AMA and your local doctor. Because I'm teaching people how to stay well. Anyway, for my class, I wrote this little book, Natural Progesterone. For my colleagues, I just had it printed by a local printer where I live in Sebastopol, California. And to my amazement, they've been sending the book to their sister back in St. Louis and their daughter in San Diego and their mom back in New York. And I've had to keep printing more and more and more of these. And finally, Warner came to me and said, we like your little book, but it's all biochemistry. It's got chemical formulas and graphs and things like that in here. And they don't realize how intelligent women are and intuitive. The women can follow the arrows, you know, better than the men can, because the men are saying, I don't understand that big word. So they came and said, can you write the same thing in lay term? And I said, no, but with Virginia Hopkins' help, I can do it. And so it's the same thing, but now it's 372 pages. And then there were a few things that needed to be added to tell about the estrogen story. Because here I didn't detail how estrogen got to be such a dominant drug. It's the number one profit-making drug in the pharmaceutical industry. Did you know that? Higher than Prozac, you know, higher than Pepsi, and higher than Valium. They make more money off selling estrogen than they do any other drug. So it's interesting to know how that came about. Because it didn't come about because it's as good as they claim. It came about because they discovered a wonderful way to make money. So I wrote that book. And now Warner admits they didn't like the title. Our title was, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Your Hormones. And they said, oh no, there's 50 million baby boomers approaching menopause, so we want the word menopause in the title. So they put menopause in the title, and now they say, you were right. 35-year-old women who desperately need the progesterone are passing up the book because they're not actually in menopause. So now they want us to write a sequel on the premenopausal uses of progesterone and for men. Now their research shows that men make the same hormones, admittedly in smaller amounts, but it's the same changes in the hormones that lead to the same problems. So instead of getting excessive bleeding, they get prostate hypertrophy. And instead of getting cancer of the uterus, they get cancer of the prostate. And the prostate is the male equivalent of the woman's uterus. And it comes from the same cells during the time of embryo life when the different cells are differentiating into male and female. But the primary cells are the same. Isn't that amazing? So they respond to the same hormones. Okay. Let me tell you the saga that has happened to me in the last 20-some years now. I started with osteoporosis. As you know, we were all taught in medical school that osteoporosis is due to estrogen deficiency and that everybody should be treated with estrogen, calcium, vitamin D, exercise, quit smoking cigarettes. And over here it says all this calcium is needed. They say 1,200 milligrams, and it's all crazy nonsense. Turns not to be true. People think of osteoporosis as this lady. A little old lady you see at the Safeway store, she's shrunk down, she's all bent over, she's getting around on her cart, her bones are obviously severely affected. And more intelligent people say, but it started earlier in life, backbone started losing bone mass. And in fact, if you measure your height, that's the most sensitive indicator for osteoporosis in your body. If you measure your height when you're 16 years old, and then again when you're 26, or when you're 36, you discover at 36 you're beginning to lose weight, height already. And so it really starts when the women are about 32, 34 years old. Isn't that interesting? So it's not a disease of older women. It's a disease of younger women in young middle age, which becomes progressively worse and causes the fractures later in life. But the disease is underway here. And the thing that led me to that were graphs like this. This is a graph depicting the bone mass, how dense your bones are, how solid your bones are, starting at age 10, going up to age 80, and you will see that the peak bone mass is about age 35, right there. So just think about this for a minute. At age 35, what's happening? You're still having periods, right? In fact, you're going to have periods until you go through menopause at age 50 or 51 or 55. And yet at age 35, you've hit your peak bone mass and you're starting to lose bone from then on. You're still exercising. You're still driving the kids around to different schools and playgrounds. You've discovered that you tend to gain weight more easily, hard to get off. You tend to be more tired. Your libido is down a little bit. But at any rate, think about what's happening in the bones here. All the estrogen in the world is there, and osteoporosis has started. You can follow the bones of women over 35 in this country, and they lose 1.5% of the bone mass per year. By the time they arrive at menopause, they've lost 15, 20, 24% of their bone mass. Obviously, it's not due to estrogen. Does everybody agree that we've settled that? That no longer exists? Throw it out? It's not due to estrogen deficiency. But look what happens when estrogen then falls. For about 5 years, you get a more rapid rate. Y'all see that? Right up here. You get a more rapid rate of bone mass loss, which happens for about 4 or 5 years, and you're losing bone at the rate of 4 or 5% a year, and then you return to the rate that you were before. That 4 or 5 year segment is due to a change of estrogen. So there is one role, and that's in those 4 or 5 years. They've proven that adding estrogen after age 70, for instance, does nothing. But right around menopause, it might be wise to soften the fall of the estrogen. Dr. Peter Ellison for the World Health Organization has been measuring hormone levels around the world. Chinese ladies, North African ladies, Central American ladies, Asian ladies, Mediterranean ladies, all over the world. And it's all been published by the World Health Organization. And it uses the saliva hormone assay, which is by far the most relevant, most accurate, the easiest to get, and very, very stable. You can get the spit and do the test 2 months later, and it's still accurate. Isn't that amazing? And they can test the estrogen and progesterone levels and testosterone and cortisone and any other steroids you want. It shows up in the saliva exactly in proportion to the amount that's in the body. Isn't that beautiful? Whereas blood tests are not very good because these hormones are all fat soluble and they don't actually float around freely in the serum of the blood, which is watery. And fat doesn't mix with water. So most of it is riding around in red blood cell membranes, and the doctor who orders a blood test is only measuring the serum. So he's missing out. He doesn't understand. He's only measuring the amount that's bound to protein to be sent to the liver to be excreted. When it's bound to protein, then it's water-soluble, so it's in the serum. That's what the doctor's measuring. He's measuring the amount on the way to be excreted. He's not measuring the amount that's floating around and is active in your body. Isn't that strange? Yes, Peter Ellison. What he did was find that the level of estrogen in young women in the industrialized countries is much higher than the level of estrogen is in the third world countries. And I'll tell you what the reasons for that are later. But when you drop from a very high level down to a medium level, you still have plenty of estrogen, still have your periods. But what happens is there are cells in the bone that resorb old bone, and they're the ones that are activated when the estrogen falls. I will show you what I'm talking about here. This is from Lancet, which I think is the world's best medical journal, not only because scholarship is so good, but they have a sense of humor. And you don't find that in medical journals very often. These guys look like Pac-Man. Does everybody know a Pac-Man? From the mall games, game shows and stuff. The diagonal lines represent the bone mass. And Pac-Man are called, their real name is osteoclast. And they roam around through your bone. There are little tiny channels throughout the bone called canaliculi. And there's living cells going around checking on the bone all the time. And when they find bone that was made 4 or 5 years ago or 10 years ago and it's become a little bit excessively crystallized and becomes more likely to fracture, those little osteoclasts just move in and dissolve it all away. They just dissolve it away, and it's called resorption, and there's nothing left. the calcium and magnesium get swept up in the bloodstream, and there's actually a little deficit left behind, a microscopic little deficit. Is called a lacuna, a little lake, and of emptiness. And then along come osteoblasts with a B, and the osteoblasts are just waiting in the wings, and as soon as these guys move on to another place, they move in and they make new bone, which is more dense and better bone than the bone that was removed. Does it surprise you that bone is living tissue and is always being restored? Just like skin, fingernails, hair, red blood cells, white blood cells, every cell in your body, except brain cells and muscle cells, which are, they don't multiply, every other cell in your body is constantly being newly made and replaced all the time. And bones are that way. They are living tissue. A tooth is not. If you break a tooth and some clever dentist devises a little way to hold it end to end, it's not going to heal. But if you break a bone and some clever doctor gets a little cast that holds the bone end on end, that sucker knits together. It doesn't matter if you're 15 years old or a 95-year-old Christian Scientist. It's going to knit together. The cells are still alive and they can do this. And granted, it takes a little longer when you're older. The younger ones heal faster, but it's due to these osteoblasts. These osteoblasts rush to the site of the crack and they just make new bone to fill in. So this is going on all the time. And now, in the last 5 or 10 years, what we found, and everybody now realizes, estrogen slows these guys down. Estrogen actually takes oxygen away from cells. Estrogen imposes a burden on cells and slows them down. And in this case, they inhibit it by blocking interferon, a hormone called interferon, and slows these guys down. They still do their work. So on the long bones in your arm or your leg, the total time for 100% change of your bone is about 12 to 14 years. Every 12 to 14 years, every single atom, molecule, every mineral in your bone has been totally renewed. Isn't that amazing? Now, on the backbones, in the heel bone, in the kneecap, the so-called trabecular bone, which is lighter bone because it's built for just fighting compression, like this room. You see, by putting up trusses and these beams, you can create a space. It doesn't have to be filled with cement. The same thing with this type of bone in your back and so on. It doesn't have to be solid because it's just preventing compression, like this room. So guess what? The Latin name for beams is trabecula. So it's called trabecular bone. Little beams with spaces. So they have a turnover time of about 5 years. Isn't that something? Every 5 years, backbones are totally renewed. And which means that 1/5 of it every year is undergoing remodeling. That's the name for remodeling. And you're remodeling your house. You're taking out the old beams, putting in new. And so this is what these guys do. These are stimulated into action by progesterone and or testosterone. And that's why men don't get their osteoporosis till later, because they continue to make their testosterone till they're 65, 70. So at any rate, now we know estrogen holds these guys down and progesterone stimulates these. So this is like a bank account now. This is a bone account, which is like a bank account. Bank account is the product of two processes. One is withdrawal and one is deposits. And if the withdrawals and the deposits match, the bank account balance stays the same, right? But if withdrawals exceed the deposits, then your bank account goes down. Or if your deposits are less than for some other reason than the withdrawals, then you'll go down. The only way to go up is to add more money into the bank account and slow up the withdrawals. And so during menopause years, a little bit of estrogen, some women make enough so it doesn't happen. That's now why we now have these new bone mineral density testing machines, so we can find out if someone really needs it. They might benefit from a little estrogen for 4 or 5 years around menopause. But what they really need is progesterone to stimulate these guys. Everybody follow that? Good. Explain it to your doctors, because they do not have this idea yet, and although it's very well established. Remember the class I teach? I had a rule for the class that if they take the class, they can't become patients of mine. I didn't want anybody to say Dr. Lee is teaching the class to advertise his services. Actually, I could do this with impunity because I'd been in practice there for 20 years and my practice was far too big as it was, and I couldn't handle it anyway. So it made me look good without costing me a thing. But this was what happened to this lady. This is her bone mineral density. You should know that normal bone mineral density is about 1 or 1.1, like a dollar or a dollar 10. And she was down to 66 cents. And she was 72 years old. She hadn't had a period for about 25 years. She was taking care of her very ill husband, who was sick with terminal emphysema. and she tried to lift him up out of a chair one time, she broke her arm. So she was found to have this bad osteoporosis. She went to her doctor, who sent her to a special bone doctor, who told her that she would have to take estrogen. And she said, oh no, my sister took estrogen and got breast cancer and died. So he said, well, then you have to take fluoride. That was back in 1982, and he didn't know any better. They thought that fluoride might help bones, and of course it doesn't. It actually raises bone mineral density a degree or two, but it's not really a good bone. It's not the same as real bone that's made. It's more like calcium fluoride crystals that just accumulate. Like if someone, say you had a bridge that was developing cracks in it, was getting kind of run down, and the engineer comes out and said, we've got to make this bridge stronger, and the guy says, oh, I can do that, and he gets his gravel truck and puts a couple of inches of gravel on top of the bridge. So now it's thicker, but it's not stronger, is it? And that's what happens with fluoride. And so she explained that to the doctor. She says, Dr. Lee says, and he showed us the New England Journal of Medicine article that says, quantity yes, quality no. In fact, all the new studies since then show that fracture rates are actually higher in fluoridated areas. All the studies are in France, England, and six of them here in the United States, and they all show the fracture rate, the hip fracture rate in women eventually almost doubles in fluoridated areas. Isn't that amazing? And still they're trying to fluoridate you. So when she told him that, he sat there for a while, and then he said, well, why don't you go see Dr. Lee then? Well, that was all right, because that made it a referral. So I was able to tell her about what I was doing with the progesterone, and she went on, look what happened. She wouldn't take the estrogen, but every year, this is about whatever it is, 8 months later, and then a year later, and a year later, so it's like 3.5 years, she went from 0.66 to 0.88. That's a 22-point increase from 66 to 88. That's about a third. That's almost a 30% increase of bone mass. Whoa. There's no treatment that does anything as good as this. So she's very happy. And by the way, she's still taking my class, and she's almost 90. And she drove up to Canada last year to see her sister, who has Alzheimer's. So my friend said, well, John, treatment works because it's just all placebo. And somehow he convinces them their bones are going to get better, and then they do. So I tell people, if it is placebo, it's damn good placebo, because the bones do get better. And then this lady happened. She's from Pennsylvania, and I'd known her because we had a meeting together in Washington, D.C. on some nutritional problem at the FDA. And some years later, in 1992, when she was 74, she rolled over in bed and had a spontaneous fracture of one of her lumbar vertebrae and had great pain. And she called me, and I said I was working on a book on this, and I'd be happy to send her some of the chapters, because what she would really needs is some progesterone. She had gone through an early menopause, and even though she was a health nut and looked great, you cannot build bone unless you have progesterone. Simple as that. So she had not had any progesterone production in her body probably for 30, 35 years. And her bone density, is this bottom number here, was about 46. Remember the other one was 66? This was, so she has even worse. And she looked young, she looked great, everything was fine, she followed the right diet, she exercised, she took all the mineral supplements and vitamin supplements, she was a health nut, right? But she's still developing osteoporosis. So her husband's a doctor, her son's a doctor, and of course she has a doctor, and then they got another doctor for her. And she told them that Dr. Lee said that she could just use this over-the-counter progesterone cream and that it would help her bones. And they said, nonsense, there's nothing in the medical books about that. And she said, yes, Dr. Lee said that's why he's writing the book, because if there was a book on that, he wouldn't have bothered to write a book about it. So she went on it. She's very stubborn. But her husband made her get a test of her bone mineral density every 8 months. So every year they send me the results. So her bone went up from 44 up to about 54 the first 8 months, and then up to about, what would this be, close to 56, 55 up here. And then it leveled off, in fact went down a little bit. And over on the side her husband wrote, lower value at 23 months, possibly due to nerve block administration. Well, I called up her doctor and I said, "What's this nerve block administration?" He said, "Well," he was kind of feeling out of the loop here because she was getting well on her own. So he decided to give her some methylprednisolone by intramuscular injection. Methylprednisolone is cortisone. And cortisone blockades the receptors against progesterone. Because they are so similar, the cortisone occupies the same receptors but tells the cell not to do something. Cortisone is a suppressant. If you're breaking out with poison oak, your doctor gives you cortisone to stop you from breaking out. If your joints are all inflamed, the doctor gives you cortisone to stop the inflammation. Cortisone is a stopper of actions. Progesterone is a stimulator of actions. So when you take cortisone, your progesterone is blockaded and can't work. And when they saw that she was now going down, they stopped it. And look what happened. The next years it took off again. And now they've been following her hip bones too. And they're all increasing. And she increased 37.9% in less than 5 years. There's no medicine can do that for you. No Fosamax, no calcium, no nothing. This is in a league of its own. Isn't that amazing? You don't have to be an astronaut, physicist, or anything. It's just obvious. The progesterone in people who are deficient in it helps the bones make more new bone. And in her case, she'd done everything else right, so it worked. But there can be cases where a woman has a very bad diet, eating way too much meat, creating metabolic acidosis. She could be on too much thyroid, activating the osteoclasts too much. She could never exercise, maybe, and then the bones aren't put to any stress and they don't want to grow. So all kinds of reasons why it doesn't work. However, it works pretty darn well when you get everything right. Most of the calls I get nowadays, since I retired 10 years ago from active practice to write these books, I get a call and say, their doctor wants to put them on Fosamax. Have you ever heard about Fosamax? Yeah. Fosamax is a class of compounds called bisphosphonates. And you think right off that you don't know what bisphosphonates are, but you actually do. Have you ever seen bath soap that's designed for the bathtub so you can remove the gray ring that gathers on the bathtub? That gray ring is skin cells that wash off. It's not dirt. It's the skin cells, but they plaster themselves to the enamel of the bathtub, and they're hard to remove. So they put a compound in the bath powder, the bathtub powder, that dissolves human cells. That's bisphosphonate. It eats up human cells. And one of the cells it can eat up, it can eat a hole right through your esophagus or through your stomach. If you were to take the bath powder and put it in your mouth, it could eat a hole right through there. And Fosamax is one of those. And it eats holes through your esophagus and your stomach. And in fact, the company, when they sell it, they give you a little warning thing. Be sure not to lie down after taking one of these tablets. Because if the tablet sits in one spot, it can burn a hole right through it. So, and it's done that. But they say that you have to do it because it's such a wonderful drug. Because it kills off the osteoclasts. Remember those little osteoclasts were going around eating up bone? Old bone? Well, you see, that's necessary because the only ones that the osteoblasts can make new bone at are those places where the osteoclasts have removed the old bone. It's a chain. It's a linkage there. If you stop the removal of old bone, you will end up with a skeleton of old bone. And then you won't be able to make any new bone because there's no more little lacunae where the osteoblasts come in and make new bone. So it's designed to fail. The failure shows up in about 5 years because bones turn over slowly. Now, they got their approval to sell this after 2 years of trials. So they've got 3 years to sell the hell out of this and get the $150 million back before the fractures start up. So they advertise very effectively and they give samples to doctors, and doctors feel very gallant in giving out samples of very expensive medicine to you. But you see, the idea from the company is to trap you into taking it and then you'll be on it for the rest of your life. It's a very sweet deal to do this. So at any rate, there's never been a good test of comparing it to the old-fashioned treatment, which is a little estrogen and a little progesterone, right? So here is the result of a monster test involving Europe, England, and the United States. And they took women who were right at the age of menopause, right when this drug should have worked best, because it stops the osteoclast from resorbing bone. So remember I said the age of menopause, right in those years, that's when the estrogen drops and that's when the osteoclasts speed up, more bone is resorbed. So they chose these women right in that age when the Fosamax should work best. And they used two different doses of Fosamax. they used a 2 milligram and a 10 milligram, 2.5 milligram and a 10 milligram, and they compared that with a little Premarin along with a progestin, which is a synthetic progesterone that is quite a bit like real progesterone on bone action. Many of the progestins don't do anything for bone. All the progestins that's in birth control pills don't do anything. And Provera doesn't do much for bones, where people who use Provera, they get a 5% increase in 3 years. My patients got a 15% increase. Okay, so it's partway there, but the synthetics just can't work as well. But at any rate, they use progesterone as one of these little synthetics. And here we have, on the total bones in the body, this is a 2-year study, and here is the Premarin and the progesterone up here. It had about a 2% increase at 2 years. These are the untreated patients, and these are the Fosamax-treated patients. So it was less than 1% change. There was very little improvement at all. Twice as much improvement from the estrogen. And here is the arm bone. Here's the untreated patients, here's the Fosamax-treated patients, and here's estrogen and progesterone. It kept it at a stable level. Can you see the difference? Which is better? The estrogen and progesterone is better. Fosamax didn't do much. And here's in the hip, here's the untreated patients, here's the Fosamax, and here again at the top, up in here, is good old estrogen and progesterone. So in all places of the body, the old-fashioned treatment of a little estrogen and a little progesterone works better than Fosamax by a great deal. By looking at the summary of the article in the New England Journal of Medicine, this was just a couple of weeks ago, you can tell what company sponsored the test. If the Premarin folks, the estrogen folks, had sponsored the test, they would say, look, Premarin is twice as good, see the one on the distal forearm, or the total body, Premarin is twice as good as Fosamax. And they could raise the question, why do you bother with Fosamax? It burns a hole through your stomach, and it's a very bad drug, and you can't get it out of your body. It has a half-life of over 15 years. That means in 15 years, half of it will still be in your body. And 15 years after that, half of that will still be in your body. Going around in your bones, killing off osteoclasts that are trying to resorb bones so you can build new bone. So it's very stupid to use it. However, it was funded by the company that made Fosamax. They had a one-line conclusion to their summary. This study shows that Fosamax is almost as good as Premarin and progesterone. Almost. 1%, 2% different. But that 2% is 100% different because it doubled it. You all follow that? None of you will ever succumb and use Fosamax again, I hope. Okay. Good. Fosamax, by the way, is the eighth of the bisphosphonates in a row to have come upon the scene over the last 15 years. All other seven have failed. There's no reason to even think that Fosamax would succeed. But it just shows the success of advertising to doctors. That's how they sell Buicks, you know, Cadillacs. I thought, because of the way that graph was presented, I would put my data on with theirs. And here's the ones who don't do anything. They lose 1.5% a year. And these are the ones on the estrogen. And when I added progesterone, look what happened to real progesterone, a 15% increase in 3 years on average. Now, that's not bad.
Is progesterone alone?
Yeah, most of them were alone. Some did, some didn't, because I divided my patients individually. It's very easy to tell if someone needs estrogen. It's very easy to tell if someone doesn't. Estrogen deficit, deficiency, causes vaginal dryness, atrophy of the mucosal cells, causes night sweats, hot flushes, and if people don't have that, they don't have estrogen deficiency. You make estrogen, even if I were to remove your ovaries, your bodies make estrogen and body fat. So a woman who's nicely rounded out makes plenty of estrogen for the body, for every part of the progesterone use except carrying a baby. So in other countries where women tend to have, where slimness is not the ideal, women don't need the estrogen. They have good bones. And osteoporosis is a recent disease. It's a disease of this century. About a year ago, had to move a church in England. And I don't know if you've been in England, but they all have slate floors, these older churches, and underneath the slate floors are bodies. Yeah, that's where they bury the most prominent people in the church congregation. When they die, they get to be right under the floor of the church. The poor ones get to be in the ground outside someplace. But they, when they moved the church, they decided they had to move the bodies. And some clever person said, let's do bone mineral density tests on these people because we know that they were buried 200 years ago. We know who they were. We know what kind of work they did. We know how old they were. We know so much about them from the church records. We can then compare to people now in England. And they found that at every age, male or female, the bone density 200 years ago was better than it is today. And they found that at menopause age, there was no drop-off. That's an artifice of the 20th century. It's due to your high estrogen levels and your intent to be slim and perhaps other factors involving stress and exercise and so on. But you have estrogen levels that are much higher than ever found anywhere on the world before, are in the United States and other industrialized countries. And you are lacking progesterone at an earlier age than ever happened in the world before and is not happening in other countries and didn't happen 200 years ago. This is a 20th century illness that is unrecognized by conventional medicine and badly treated. Just one more and then we'll get away from the osteoporosis. But I want to arm you with these facts because you are going to have to explain it all to your doctor. When I retired 10 years ago, I asked my nurse to select out 100 active patients who were on progesterone cream and for their osteoporosis. And this is a graph I made. Actually, my son made it for me. You can tell these are all homemade, of 62 patients who had had at least 3 years of bone mineral density testing. The black is where they were when I first saw them. The white is where they were 3 years ago. And as you can see, it ain't bad. You see all these improvements across the top? Now, some of them didn't improve. Here's one, here's one, here's another. They didn't lose, here's another. But when they have good bones to begin with, you don't expect improvement because they're already good. See, they're up over that 1.1. They're, sound is a dollar, is what I used to tell them. If it's over one, I don't worry about their bones. If it's down around 0.9, like 90 cents, that's the time to get worried. If they're down around 0.7, like 70 cents, they're in real trouble. They should be very careful on steps. They should put the bars in their room and in their bathroom and so on. And if they get down around 0.6, just turning around, the hip might break. Everybody will say, she fell to the ground and she got a hip fracture. No, no, she got a hip fracture and she fell to the ground. That's what happens when you got bad bones. So at any rate, every once in a while they don't. And that's when you have to look for the other factors. That's when you get to play doctor. Anybody can give progesterone to women and get results on most people. But once in a while it doesn't, and then you have to think, maybe there's something wrong with the way they digest calcium. I had one lady who called, and she came in and she hadn't improved. And she said, I don't think I'm absorbing calcium. I said, why do you think that? She said, well, my doctor is giving it to me as a little white pill. And when I go to the bathroom, I can see the little white pill in the toilet. And I said, I agree. I don't think we're absorbing the calcium. And then she said, could you give it to me in a liquid form? And I said, I could, but then we'd never know. So I said, there's only really one or two reasons why you don't absorb the calcium. The most common one is that you're no longer making acid in your stomach. It requires acid and vitamin D to absorb the calcium. She said, oh, well, I've got plenty of acid. In fact, I've got too much acid. Ross Valley Clinic is treating my indigestion by giving me Tagamet, which is like a Pepcid. It cuts out 80-90% of the acid that you make, plus Tums. And Tums are an antacid. And so Tums really don't work very well for bone building because once you block the acid, then the calcium doesn't get absorbed. So I said, well, has it helped your indigestion? And she said, no, as a matter of fact, it's worse. And I said, maybe you have indigestion because you're not making enough acid. And I'm going to ask you to go out. I want you to quit taking those medicines. I want you to go out and buy some hydrochloric acid and take it with meals, some betaine hydrochloride or something like that. Go to the health food store and get some, and every time you eat a meal, throw one of those down. It'll help you digest. And with that, her indigestion went away, and her bones took off, because now she could absorb the calcium. Isn't that amazing? She's 75 years old, and it's common that at age 70, in fact, 50% of people of age 70 are not making enough acid to digest calcium. How many doctors tell their patients to go out and get some hydrochloric acid? Doesn't happen. But you see what happens if you don't treat the bones right? You get a hip fracture. And the orthopedist loves that. He only needs two or three a month, and he can have a Mercedes and a sailboat and pay his alimony and do all these things on two or three good hip fractures a month. When my patients were on the progesterone, I didn't have any more hip fractures in my practice, and each of the orthopedists in Marin County thought I was mad at them for some reason. They would say, John, you're not sending me any more hip fractures. Are you mad at me for some reason? I said, no, I just don't have any more hip fractures. They've got strong bones now. You know, they just couldn't believe it. But they were so nice to me, they took me out to dinner, they'd send me a bottle of wine and all this stuff, because they were trying to make up for some imagined the goof that they'd made. It's a nice thing about being a family doctor. All the specialists depend on you, you know, to make the right referral. And my patients didn't, but didn't need a referral. So now, I want to say a few words about what progesterone is. You all know it's a hormone, and you probably all know that we make our hormones out of cholesterol. Not thyroid, but all the steroid hormones. And so first we have to make cholesterol. And that's the way the biochemists picture the cholesterol molecule. At each corner of these rings is a carbon. And on each corner are a couple hydrogens, which they don't bother to print. And this thing up here in the upper right-hand corner is a remnant of a fat that didn't quite fit. So cholesterol has this remnant up here, 6-carbon remnant, which is extra. This basic chassis, I call it, the chassis of the molecule, is common to all the steroid hormones. They're all made from this. So the first thing is we got to make the cholesterol, and we make that out of, guess what? Sugar and refined starches. 80% of our cholesterol comes from sugar and refined starches, because you cannot store sugar and refined starches anywhere in your body. There's no place you can open up your body and say, whoa, look at all that sugar. Not there. So what happens to it? We eat it. In fact, we have no control over the digestion and absorption of it. Every single iota that you eat of sugars and refined starches goes directly into your bloodstream. You have no control. There's no gate. And the body, and it doesn't, well, where does it go? It doesn't come out the BM. It all gets transformed into fat. And a portion of that, of course, is cholesterol. Now, it leaves 20% that the sugars don't make. Of course, depends on the individual, genetics, how much you eat, ice cream and everything like that, and donuts and pies and crust, all that stuff. That's where you get most of it. The other 20% is made from other kinds of fat, and none of it is made from eating cholesterol. You don't make any hair by eating hair. You don't make toenails by eating toenails. Imagine the man that wakes up someday and his wife says, you know, Bill, I'm really bothered. You got a lot of hair on your back of your hand and everything. Maybe it's some sort of hormone problem. So he goes to the doctor, and the doctor does all these tests and says, no, every hormone's right. Your testosterone, everything's right. It's just the way your grandfather probably had the same thing. He said, well, what would you have done if you found something wrong, or what should I do about the hair? And he said, don't eat so much hair. And the guy said, wait a minute, I can't pay you for that. That's stupid. Eating hair doesn't change the amount of hair that my body makes. And he said, by the way, did you find anything else wrong? He said, yeah, I found your cholesterol's up a little too high. Well, what should I do about that? He said, don't eat so much cholesterol. Thank you very much, doctor. And he pays him for that advice. You see how stupid that is? Both comments by the doctor were equally stupid. But the patients pay for the one and think poorly of the doctor for the other. They haven't realized that you don't make cholesterol because you eat cholesterol. No, we make it out of other fats. Eggs, by the way, are fine. There is no study in humans showing that egg eating raises your cholesterol or increases your risk of heart disease. Zero. So at any rate, first we make that by putting fragments, little 2-carbon fragments of sugar and fats together. We make that. Then, in the cells, the mitochondria. Now I have to tell you about mitochondria. There are like 2,000 or 3,000 little tiny granules that you can see in the microscope in every cell. These little granules are mitochondria. And they can take sugary things and convert them into other things. They convert them into little fragments to make fat for storage, or they can break them and convert the sun's energy into ATP, triphosphate bonds. That's the real energy that the body works on, is triple phosphate bonds. So it converts the energy into ATP. But it converts the cholesterol into pregnenolone. It knocks off that little segment of fat up there and replaces it with an oxygen. You see that? One little change. Has little scissors, cuts that, oxygen appears there. Okay, then that's released in the cell, still in the cell. You have 70 to 80 trillion cells we're talking about. And this all happens in the cells, you see. So then what happens is, if it's a testicle or the ovary, as little follicles, it enters through the follicle, and the follicles can knock off this hydrogen, and now you've got progesterone. Change of one atom changes the total function of this. See, this is not a hormone, this is. The reason I show this to you is that you must realize the change of one atom on a molecule changes the hormone function completely. Just like on a key in a lock, the change of one little notch changes whether that key works. on a given lock. Follow that? Because the medical profession is trying to sell you altered keys. They've changed the molecule. So this is the molecule that is progesterone. Does not matter that we make it from cholesterol or that scientists in 1934 discovered how to make it from fats and oils in plants. It's the same molecule, same action. This is the cholesterol, and that's our progesterone, and this is a fat that comes out of plants, and this is the progesterone that scientists can make from that in the commercial process, and they are identical. So what's in the tube back there, gentle changes, is this. And no, it's the same thing. And it's 100% pure USP, grade A, real progesterone. This is the guy who did it, Russell E. Marker. Let me read this. He puzzled out the precise molecular, it's right here, structure of many saponins, that's the fats and oils and plants, and he devised a method he named after himself, the Marker degradation technique, that converts and reshapes the saponin molecule into one identical in structure to progesterone. Isn't that something? At the time that he did this, progesterone was available for $36,000 a pound in the midst of the Depression. That would be $3,600,000 a pound now. The only way they could get it, see, it's not fair to take a lady's ovaries out and squeeze out a little drop of progesterone, because you can't put the ovary back in. I mean, she's perfectly castrated from then on. So that's not good. But they do it to pigs. They take the pig's ovaries out and they can squeeze out a little bit. It takes about 1,000 pigs to get enough progesterone to put in one of those little tubes. So that doesn't work. And in France, they tried to get it from the placenta. During pregnancy, the placenta makes a ton of it, but it also makes all this estriol and DHEA and cortisol. It was very difficult to separate out one molecule from another because they're also close. So that didn't work either. But Dr. Marker, Professor Marker, he went back to teach at the State College in Pennsylvania. He taught there until he was 92, and he died in February of 1995, just 3 years ago. And he created Syntex Corporation. He owned 40% of Syntex, was the world's largest hormone manufacturing company, because he learned how to make these hormones from plants. And he brought the price down to $7 a pound on the world market, from $36,000. That's his most famous accomplishment. And he must have been some guy. He did all kinds of stuff. But he got bored with Syntex, or all the squabbling all the time in business, and so he sold out. Sold his 40%, went back and taught for the rest of his life. Loved it. Now, a few more things to show you about progesterone, because I want to get to the new stuff about the cancer and the heart disease. This is the progesterone molecule, and our body can use that to make our own cortisol and corticosterone, and we use it to make estrone, and we use it to make testosterone. Now, remember I told you that each of these, look, just by adding one little hydroxyl group here and an oxygen there, totally changes into the opposite hormone. One atom changes a hormone. Look at what they sell to doctors. They call this progesterone. They started with progesterone, then they added an acetate group and a methyl group here, and then they think it works the same. It actually hangs on to the receptor about three times more tenaciously, and it doesn't do nearly the benefit, and it's very toxic to the liver. And if you read, you know what the PDR is, a physician's desk reference? Look up the medroxyprogesterone acetate, and you'll see about six columns of side effects. There are no side effects to real progesterone at normal levels, normal physiological levels. But Provera, this is Provera, this is what doctors think of. And when you come up to them and say, Dr. Lee says progesterone's a good idea, and they'll say, oh no, I've had patients who have bad side effects on progesterone. He's talking about Provera. The poor guy doesn't even know it's not progesterone. You see, progesterone is the name of this particular molecule. It's not a class name like the word apple or estrogen is. Those are class names. There's a whole bunch of different estrogens. There's a whole bunch of different apples. There's no apple named apple, and there's no estrogen named estrogen. They all have their own name, estrone, estradiol, estriol, like the apples. You know, you've got your Delicious and your Gravensteins and your Pippins, and they all have their same name. They all have their own name. But progesterone, that's the name of that molecule. There's no class. This is a Provera, which is a different thing, and the class name is progestin. Progestin, not progesterone. So you have to remember that. And this is the most common one used in birth control pills. This one they didn't even make from progesterone. They made it from testosterone. You see the molecule is identical here, except for this little ethylene group up here. See, they don't like to sell the real molecule because they can't patent it. And if they can't patent it, they can't make any money on it. So they deliberately alter the molecule into something Mother Nature never saw. And then they can patent it. But your body never saw it either. So this one, has a tenacity in the receptor sites which is about 23 times greater. If anyone's on birth control pill, adding progesterone can't possibly work because there's no free receptor sites for it to attach to. Everybody follow that? You got that? Yeah, okay. And yeah, that's nothing to it. You don't have to be an astrophysicist to figure this out. This is just a review of all the roles of progesterone that when I looked in the literature, I found. One is the procreation effects. It is the thing that's necessary for the egg to implant, for the egg to develop into the embryo, and the embryo to develop into the fetus, and for the whole 9 months of gestation. And it also is the hormone that restores libido. People say, "Whoa, that's a side effect." It's not a bad side effect, though. And it's not that strong. It just makes the guy across the room a little better looking. That's all it does. You will still be in control of all your faculties. Then the precursor role. It's the thing that we make all the other steroid hormones out of. Now, we can make estrogen from body fat, even without progesterone. So estrogen is kind of universally made by the body. But the major part during your fertile years is made by from progesterone. Then it has all these intrinsic effects that nobody really knows how it works. But it protects you against all these cancers, endometrial cancer, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and it's a skin moisturizer. It's been in cosmetics for over 40 years. Nobody has ever complained of a side effect. It stimulates new bone formation, restores the estrogen receptor sensitivity, so that, say, a woman thinks she's gone through menopause because she's missed some periods and she's not pregnant, and the doctor said, "Well, it must be menopause, but we're not sure till go for a year or so," and she starts some progesterone, her periods might come back. Because it restores the estrogen receptors, so the estrogen you are making will now work as if it's enough until it drops a little bit more. Because at menopause, it doesn't drop out of sight. It just drops below the level necessary to have periods. But it's still there. So anyway, then maintain cell oxygen levels, normalize zinc and copper, normalize blood clotting. This is important. The Harvard Nurses Questionnaire Study, have you heard of that? 42,000, 43,000 nurses completing a questionnaire every 2 years for 10 years. They found that the healthy nurses, non-cigarette smoking, the tennis playing, slim, active, healthy nurses whose doctors put them on a little estrogen, had an increase of strokes due to clots that was 42% higher than the women who refused the estrogen. Whoa. And they used that study to tell you that it's good for your heart. They had fewer heart attacks. Yeah, they were dying of all these strokes. Isn't that amazing? And the ones who weren't given the estrogen by their doctors were the ones who were obese, had diabetes, had hypertension, or had previous vascular disorders and or cancer. Now, these are all risk factors for more illness. So granted, one or two more of them out of the 43,000 may have had a heart attack, but they weren't comparing equal groups. You see what's wrong with the study? Yeah. And the difference was insignificant. It was less than 0.5% difference in the heart attack rate when you compared the total groups. There were 22,000 nurses that received it, 23,000 that didn't. There was a difference of about 6 patients over 10 years out of 40-some thousand nurses. That is a small number. But there was a big increase in the number of strokes in the healthy nurses who took the estrogen. You see, they count on the doctor not reading the study. They like the doctor to quote the study, and they provide him with the selected quotes. But they absolutely know that the poor guy never had time to read the study.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, W201CD Ithaca Community Radio, or Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Unwelcome Guests. You're listening to Graveyards Are Full of Women That Shouldn't Be There, a talk by John Lee, M.D. We continue.